And good morning. How many of you actually watched September 11th when the World Trade Centers? Okay, so memory is there. There's people that have been born since then that, you know, have no recollection of it at all. In St. Vincent, on that particular morning, at that time, our TV station cuts off the air from 9 o'clock till 4 in the afternoon. There's no daytime TV down there at that particular time. And we'd been watching the morning news, and just before 9 o'clock, they said that a plane had flown into the World Trade Center. And I'm like, okay, I could understand that. I've been downtown New York. I've been there on a foggy day, those tall skyscrapers, and some Cessna single engine small private plane in the fog could run into one of those buildings. It's actually happened with the Empire State Building many, many years ago with a commercial twin engine plane. But then they shifted to show the picture and the hole in the wall and the smoke coming out. I said, that was not a small plane. It's a clear sky. That was not an accident. And I told my wife to put in a tape, and we taped the whole event and sat there and listened to it. So that kind of goes with the lesson today. Resident evil. Why do we have evil in this world? And I think that a lot of liberal politicians forget about that. They want to defund the police. But what do you do when there are people who, if you will, are habitual criminals? They need to be arrested, they need to go to jail or something, because otherwise they just keep on doing. One of the things I've been doing recently is going online on YouTube to some of the Muslim sites and make comments. And sometimes I attract some very hateful replies, but I got in at about 70,000 views on this Southern Baptist youth pastor who became a Muslim. He's telling how he made the shift. And I wrote, I'm so sad to hear about this. I said, when I was growing up, I did not have an answer to the question, if I died today, where would I go? And I said, as a Muslim, you don't have an answer either, because they don't know. And I went on from there. This morning, there was 140,000 different people that have viewed that. Several of them, I'm sure, have probably read my comments. Only one decided to respond, and I responded to him, and nobody else has ever said a word. But we who have watched it realize the people who did that, yes, they were terrorists, but they were terrorists with a reason. They feel by doing what they did, they get to go to Muslim heaven. And somehow Americans have forgotten that. And somehow we've got Muslims moving into America, setting up mosques. I see advertisements for some guy that's buying a $1 million church complex that he's going to turn into a mosque. I see some other things like that. And you begin to wonder, like, what's the thinking process of some of these people if they only really research their own religion? Another site that I went to was... They asked the same guy, because he's got his own channel, did Moses some of the different Testament prophets, did they serve the same God, Allah, that Muslims serve? And he pointed out that Jehovah is the name of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And he said, yes, they serve the same one God. To which I replied, so his name is Jehovah. Try Proverbs chapter 30, I think it's verse 3. Who hath ascended up into heaven? God, Jehovah. Who hath bound the winds in his fist? Jehovah. Who has set the borders of the sea? Jehovah. What is his name? Jehovah. And what is his son's name, if thou can tell? Jehovah has a son, which they want to say Allah doesn't have a son. So as soon as they say Jehovah and Allah are the same person, I find it interesting to say that, no, that's not true, because there Allah does not have a son. And in the whole book of the Quran, Allah, Jehovah, is never mentioned. Allah is a term for God, actually. It's not a name of a God. I used to think that when I was younger. But this morning, we're going to be on the presence of evil. And I'm going to look at an interesting book. Habakkuk, a minor prophet in the Bible. Habakkuk. That's one of the last of the 12 at the very end. Habakkuk. He's next to Hezekiah if you're looking hard. He's a minor prophet because his book is small, not because he is small. He's actually a prophet of God. He's one of two places in the Bible where most of the book, or all of the book, is nothing but a dialogue, if you will, between Habakkuk and God. The other book is the book of Job. And when you think about evil, there's more than just somebody who straps on a bomb and walks into the middle of a place and kills a lot of people. We think of evil as earthquakes, tsunamis, tornadoes, natural causes of death, that type of a thing. One of these things occur, and Habakkuk, as he's writing, is looking around and he's saying, let's see, verse chapter 1, the burden which Habakkuk the prophet did see. O Lord, how long shall I cry, and thou wilt not hear, even cry out unto thee of violence, and thou wilt not save? Why dost thou show me iniquity, and cause me to behold grievance? For spoiling and violence are before me, and there are that rise up strife and contention. Therefore the law is slacked, and judgment doth never go forth, for the wicked compass about the righteous. Therefore, wrong judgment proceedeth. And so you begin to realize almost immediately he's looking around at what's going on around him, and Lord, why is this stuff allowed? Recently, a person that was jogging was kidnapped and killed, and you find out they should have been in jail because they had another crime that they didn't finish serving the full term. And then there's another guy who just decided to videotape it, stick it up on Facebook, killing people. And again, he was supposed to have been in jail, and he got free. And in today's society, again and again and again, you can look and say, when is judgment going to be done? And you've got politicians who want to do away with the police, and I think that's kind of an appropriate lesson when we're doing first responders this morning and kind of honoring them. Why do we need first responders? Because of these kind of people. But even with those kind of people, there's other kinds of which there's no background of violence. There's nothing there, and suddenly they turn into a killer. Why do these things happen? And why do people hijack planes in 9/11 and fly them into buildings? And Habakkuk is just cannot believe that, Lord, you're letting this go on. After all, is God powerful enough to stop evil? Yes, he is. So why does he let it happen? Because he don't love you enough? See, the problem is if you look at the evil, you take your eyes off of God. And that's where we're going to focus to avoid confusion. The idea that keep your eyes on God's in control. He knows what's going on. He knows exactly what limits are of mankind, and he stops whatever doesn't belong. In the book of Job, remember when God told Satan you could take everything that Job owned? Was there any limit set? You couldn't touch Job the first time. And then Satan comes back, and Job hadn't renounced God. He said, well, if you let me make him sick. And again, God says, you can do what you want to do, but you cannot destroy him. So that gives you the idea that no matter what goes on, God's still in control. Habakkuk, as he starts out here, is looking at all of this evil that's going on around him, and evidently, judges perhaps, or lack of enforcement of laws or whatever. He's seeing all of the ungodliness and wickedness that mankind is doing, which I think we're seeing a lot of that today. And we wonder, how does this stop? When is this going to stop? And so later on in the book, we're going to see where God says, that's okay. I am going to stop all that evil. How did God stop all of the evil that Israel was doing? Because that's what Job's writing about. What? Yeah, he took them out. He had the Babylonians come in and the Assyrians come in and take them out into captivity. By the way, I don't know how much you know about Assyrian, how they were, their culture. Seen the pictures, but the depictions of it. When they captured a city, they generally would line the men up and cut off their heads and have piles of heads outside the city wall. And these are the kind of people that's going to stop Israel from doing the sins that they're doing. And now Job is like, what? And by the way, Habakkuk wrote just before the Assyrian Babylonian captivity. There's another famous prophet who also wrote just before that captivity. Can you name me a name? Kind of put things in perspective. Jeremiah wrote, but he also went into captivity. But there was another guy who died before captivity. His name is Isaiah. One of the things I encounter all the time with the Muslims and in real life, people say the Bible is full of errors, contradictions, et cetera, et cetera. To which I reply, you evidently don't know the history of the Bible, because in the Bible, or of the Bible, for instance, Jeremiah, let's say he wrote the book of Isaiah. When he wrote the book of Isaiah, say he was 60 years old. He died when he was about 80, and he died about 80 years before captivity. So the book of Isaiah was written about 100 years before Babylonian, before Assyrian captivity. Okay, now, there were several things about the book of Isaiah. We found the book of Isaiah in the Dead Sea Scrolls. Everybody's heard of that because that was pretty famous. And when it was found, I read some of the critics and we're going to prove that things have changed, because here is an old book of Isaiah. And they knew it was old for a couple of reasons. One, the parchment that it was written on, and two, the ink that was used. That dated it. The number three reason was, in captivity, the Jews said, we're going to lose our language. So they added vowels to their language. If you've ever seen, was it J, W, H? No, there's four letters, J-W, J-W, H, Jehovah, V, there we go, J-W-V-H, without vowels, because that's how it would be written, without vowels. And then they added the vowels later on. When they found the book of Isaiah with the Dead Sea Scrolls, not only was the parchment and the ink dating it back before captivity, there were no vowels in it. So they're saying, okay, this is an old book, and it's complete, evidently. When they took them a year to unroll it, and when they got done, there was the whole book of Isaiah with no vowels, ink and parchment saying before captivity. Now, I have books on my shelf that are 100 years old. So here's a book that is a copy. It could be the original for all we know, but here it is. And they're going to compare it to what we used for when they did the King James Bible. Now, when the Bible was translated in 1611, do you know how many manuscripts we had? At that time, we had 5,000 manuscripts. Now, a manuscript is not, I'm not saying like a whole book. It might be part of a book, only a chapter or two out of a book. But there were whole books. There were like the Old Testament. And the Old Testament, the Jews use what's called the Masoretic Text for even today. And the Masoretic Text is what the translators of the King James Bible used. So when they found the Dead Sea Scrolls and they unrolled the book of Isaiah, they could compare it to the Masoretic Text, because that's the present day 1611 version of what they translated from. And they guess what they found? Word perfect. Word perfect. So, yeah, we've got a Bible that's very reliable. With the Dead Sea Scrolls and other findings, you know how many texts we have today now, manuscripts we've got? Not 5,000, we have 25,000 manuscripts. And they have compiled all of them and found errors. You ready for this? Spelling is considered an error, and there was no dictionaries back then. Word order would be considered an error. Praising and blessing God is opposite to blessing and praising God, or be an error. And all of those errors, guess how much it sums up to? 1%, counting spelling, counting word changes. So again, very reliable. The Bible is something very unique. There's no book that even comes close to it, not even close. And the Muslims don't like to admit to the fact, but they have no idea how many different volumes of Quran they have. And then we're talking in one language, Arabic. We're not. They don't like it when I use an English Quran. I made a comment one time, and the guy's like, yeah, we'll use Arabic. And I'm like, I've worked with languages, and when that verse from online has got 114 words in it, and the Quran I have in my hand in English has only got 51 words, something is seriously wrong. I mean, you've skipped something here, and I can't get them to reply to that, but that's very true. There's thousands of errors in the Quran, even though it came, 600 years after the Bible. So Habakkuk is looking at all the evil around him. Habakkuk, by the way, means to embrace. And he is amazed at the presence of evil. This dialogue between God and a person, that's one of two books. Theodicy is actually the term used theologically to talk about that. Habakkuk longed greatly for revival. He'd like to see the nation turn back to God, which they were not. And so there's going to be a problem coming up, the problem of evil. Now, before we get much farther, let's get our view like Habakkuk's going to have his view changed. Everybody knows the Ten Commandments, okay? Pretty much. If I were to ask you, would you give all 10? The answers are, can you do it? I've actually asked some Seventh-day Adventists who say, I'm saved because I keep the Ten Commandments, and they can't even name five of them. That's about a limit. So, you know, do you actually know the 10? But let me ask these kind of questions. If thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, oh my, it's very popular, if you will. What's the penalty for taking God's name in vain? What's the penalty for taking God's name in vain? There is a biblical example, stoning to death. See, we don't think much of it. In fact, some people use, oh my, and they think nothing of it, but yeah. Shouldn't do it. Shouldn't do it. All right. Keep the Sabbath day. Well, that's Saturday. What's the penalty for not keeping the Sabbath day? Here we go again. Stone them to death. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Do you know what the penalty is for committing adultery? Stoning to death. Matter of fact, for all 10 commandments, that's the judgment, that's the verdict. Stone them to death. That's not give them a chemical to put them to sleep before you actually give them a chemical that's going to kill them. They're going to feel every stone that hits them before they die. It's a brutal way to die, but that's what God set up. Why is it that way? Why taking God's name in vain would be a major crime that you're going to be stoned to death for? We forget something. The holiness of God. What is God's standards of holiness and not sinning? Way up here. And mankind lives down here. And Jesus made it even tougher. We are under grace, not under law, right? So aren't you glad that you don't have to worry about keeping the Sabbath or being stoned to death? But what did Jesus say about grace? You've heard it said, thou shalt not kill, but I say unto you, do not even hate your brother. Whoa. He said, you've heard it said, thou shalt not commit adultery, but I say unto you, do not have impure thoughts. You've heard it say, do not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, but I say unto you, don't use the temple or the gold of the temple or the sacrifices of the temple as something to swear on. So here's the law down here. Grace expects a lot more up here. And the only reason we can live under grace, if you will, being this much higher up, is the Holy Spirit comes inside and helps us do what we're supposed to do if we'd let him. And that's one of the huge differences between somebody who's trying to get to heaven by keeping the law and somebody saying, by grace are you saved. And grace is what gives me the power to be entirely different, bringing every thought into subjection to Jesus Christ. So with these penalties, we should realize God is holy. And that's one of his attributes. In fact, one time talking with some Muslims, I said, tell me a one-word description of God. Well, they started out with merciful and almost got stuck. They gave me two or three others, and I finally said, that's amazing. I said, I've got a holy Bible that talks about a holy spirit and a holy God. And in chapter 6 of Isaiah, he talks about being at the throne of God and the angels 24/7 saying, holy, holy, holy is the Lord. In Revelation chapter 4, again, the view is in heaven. And these angels are there, holy, holy, holy is the Lord. And so when we think of the penalties, we need to realize the holiness of God. And when you see the what we call evil in this world, we need to realize God is holy. And man is a long ways from being holy. And so when people die because of evil, guess what? God's still holy. And mankind has sinned. We had a volcano erupt in Jamaica in the 1800s. 25,000 people died. The only two survivors in the prison, down inside of the darkest part of the prison. They're the only ones that were away from the volcanic cloud that came down. There was a Asia not so long ago, 200,000 people died. God brings judgment because he is, in fact, holy. But Habakkuk realizes that all around him, he's got evil people that seem to be getting away with it. And Lord, how long are you going to let this go on? And in today's world, that same thing happens. Now, Epicurus was a guy like Aristotle and Plato, and he said, is God willing to prevent evil but not able? Then he is not powerful. Is he able but not willing? Then he's not good. Is he both able and willing? And then why do we have evil? If he's neither able or willing, then why call him God? See, we're taking our man view of what's going on around us and somehow holding God accountable to it, whereas God looking at it entirely different. There's not a person in this world that doesn't deserve to die. All have sinned and come short of the glory of God. The penalty of sin is death. So it may, you know, I've had these discussions. So you're going to tell me how you're going to die? Is there a difference? Yeah, there's a difference of how you might die, but, you know, better take that up with God, because he's the one who is going to determine how people die. And he brings judgment because of man's sin. And sometimes we think of sin bringing judgment on the person that did it, but sometimes the sin affects the people around them. For instance, there's countries that do not want missionaries. So those leaders have made it so that their young people, their children, cannot hear the gospel. So their decision affects other people. And somebody said, if you did a poll and asked God one question, what's the most common response? Why is pain and suffering in the world? Why is there? Habakkuk 1:2, O Lord, how long shall I cry and thou wilt not hear? Even cry out unto thee of violence and thou wilt not save. Have you ever prayed about something and thought, God's not there? He's not hearing me at all? But did he not say, I'll be with you always till the end of the world? Just because he's silent doesn't mean he is not present. And sometimes, again, we lose sight of that in the midst of all of what we think of as evil that's going on in this world. But God has a purpose and a reason for all of that. And sometimes the purpose and reason might be for what is your response going to be? Are you going to use it for an opportunity to witness for the Lord for somebody else? And then we find that Habakkuk is wondering, when is judgment going to come? I've got some enemies. I'd really like to see, Lord, just a bolt of lightning take care of all of that. And it doesn't happen. There was another guy in the Bible who didn't like that God's holding back judgment. His name was Jonah. He didn't want to go to Nineveh. And when he went to Nineveh, most of the book, if you remember, is not about him being swallowed by the fish. Most of the book is about after he went to Nineveh. And after he went to Nineveh, what happened? The people repented and God says, I'm not going to bring judgment. And what was Jonah's reaction? Oh, he's angry with God. And he goes and sits outside of the city. He wants to watch, you know, something happen to it. And again, that's our viewpoint. You know, sometimes we've got people, boy, I'd really just like, But you know, just maybe God might save them and totally change everything. We never know. Sometimes we have views that are our views. We don't see the big picture, if you will. God sees that, and he's the one who is in control. And let's see. And the problem with evil, we tend to only think of the evil that surrounds us. We do not think about the evil that inhabits us. Well, I know so-and-so, and he's really got a problem with such-and-such, yeah? And what's your pet sin that you do? What's your thoughts that you shouldn't be having? What type of attractions are you falling for that you shouldn't be going after? It's easy to lay blame on somebody else and to... Lord, you've got to judge them. You've got to stop them instead of looking at yourself and saying, what am I doing wrong? But God is looking at the picture on both sides, us, them. Jeremiah 17 and verse 9. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? And like I said, a lot of times we have our own problems with sin. Habakkuk's hopelessness. He not only wondered how long, but followed up, how long shall I cry and thou wilt not hear? That's a strong accusation. He's basically saying, God, you're not listening to my pain. He's also saying something else. God, you're not doing what I'm telling you to do. So Habakkuk really wants, and we want to play God. When we say, God, you've got to do this to that person. No, God might see something different that needs to be done. So don't be in a hurry to pass judgment on somebody else, because God's using that for a purpose and a reason. Psalms 13, verse 1. How long wilt thou forget me, O Lord, forever? How long wilt thou hide thy face from me? Because in the midst of all of what he's seeing, Habakkuk is not seeing God. And he's thinking, God's not there, but he is. Habakkuk didn't understand that God's silence is not evidence of his absence. Exodus chapter 2 and verse 23, it came to pass in the process of time the king of Egypt died, and the children of Israel sighed by reason of the bondage, and they cried, and their cry came up unto God by reason of their bondage. And so we find that the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people which are in Egypt, and have heard their cry by the reason of their taskmasters. I know their sorrows. You need to realize, and I need to realize, faced a trial that God hasn't already seen, heard, or known about. And violence and injustice and evil has been ongoing for a long time. Let's see. Natural evil and moral evil, two different kinds. Natural evil, tornadoes, tsunamis, hurricanes, earthquakes, fires, other natural disasters. That could probably include sickness and disease, which are part of the fallen human experience. And again, I remind you that God is holy and man's sin is punishable by death. So we're going to now argue about how God kills people off, you might say, how he brings that judgment to being. He doesn't do it our way sometimes. Moral evil includes rape, murder, slander, theft, and any other sin that proceeds out of the human heart. Matthew 15, 19, for out of the heart proceedeth evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornication, thefts, false witness, and blasphemies. When you read about somebody who has no criminal background record, nobody could ever think he's going to do that particular disease, or not disease, shooting, let's say, and then suddenly he's got a gun and he goes out and he starts killing people. What we see on the outside isn't what's happening on the inside. He's been thinking about this kind of a thing far in advance of it. And see, that's where God knows something we don't know. And I have read some of these mass shooters that we now have in court are thinking someday they're going to get out of jail. I'm hoping they never get out of jail, quite frankly. Because people who are repetitive criminals especially, do it again when they get out. And I've read recently where some guy killed his mother and the police said he shows no remorse. None. That's kind of a hard heart. The sovereignty of God. The Lord has prepared his throne in the heavens and his kingdom ruleth over all. We find delivered by his counsel and foreknowledge of God, you have taken by wicked hands of crucified and slain. From the very beginning, Christ was going to be crucified. And if you read any of the books of the Bible, the New Testament, there were times they tried to stone him to death. There were times they tried to throw him off of a cliff, and they could not succeed because God had determined exactly how Jesus was going to die in advance. So we need to realize that God's in control. If there's a mass shooting, the immediate question that comes to everyone's mind and is asked at every newscast, why? What was the motive? I think I gave this already. What is the motive for any crime you want to commit? There's only three. Well, sin is the result of it, but what is the motive? The desire of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. And so some unknown guy is suddenly going to be national news because he can kill five or six people, and that's what he's thinking. You know, I want what you've got, so I'm going to take it from you, whether you're going to give it to me or not. But it always comes down to one of those three things, and we need to realize that. And God's in control. The providence of God. In the midst of all of that, we need to realize that He is in control. Habakkuk 1:5, behold ye among the heathen, and regard and wonder marvelously, for I will work a work in your days which you shall not believe, though it be told you. Psalms 111, verses 2 and 3, the works of the Lord are great, sought of all of them that have pleasure therein. His work is honorable and glorious. There is a laboratory where over the door, Cavendish, is inscribed above the door, Magna Opera Domini, exquisite and, oh yeah, I can't even do it in Latin. It's Psalms 111, verse 2. The works of the Lord are great, sought out of all of them that have pleasure therein. The amazing work that God has done in creation. Now we know in Genesis 1:31, God saw everything that He had made, and behold, it was very good. But God is not the author of evil, neither, however, is He the victim of evil. And so we find that over time, what Adam's sin has caused. Let's see, I want to go ahead. If we look back to the reality that no system of belief can fully explain the presence of evil, it is worth also noting that no system or belief apart from God can fully explain the presence of good. For while we do live in a world with evil, we also live in a world, even in its fallen condition, with good. So if you want to stay awake at night staring at the ceiling, you can think about all the bad things in the world if you want to, but I would encourage you to think about all the good things. I don't know how your thinking goes, but I still remember I was on deputation and was driving my car, and it quit, and I had to have somebody come and tow it. And my response was, I'm glad you're here. God wanted me to talk to you. And he's like, what? I said, well, I would have only met you if my car broke, and I began to witness to him. And I had to sit in the front cab with him while we're driving somewhere. And the other time when I'm having heart surgery, they're taking me down the aisle to have heart surgery. Nobody can say to me, Mr. Barry, have you ever thought about this? You could die, and where are you going to spend eternity? They get fired for doing that in today's world. But they can't leave me out in the hallway, and I started in. I have a Bible verse for heart surgery. And they're like, finally, okay, what's the Bible verse? I shall not die, but I shall live and declare the works of the Lord, Psalms 118:17. So I urge you, in the avoiding confusion, to think about the good things in the middle of all of that. Just last week, my car died in my driveway. The battery's deader than a doornail. Had to jump start it, drive it to AutoZone, and got a brand new battery put in. Now, I could really be upset my battery died. It's hardly 2 years old. But the good of it is it was in my driveway. I wasn't in Norfolk. I wasn't up in Chesapeake somewhere. There's always some good we need to look at. And then to avoid the confusion, let's look at what God has done good for us. In all of this, we find that the character of God is there. And then the hope of redemption. Genesis chapter 50, verse 20, Joseph said to his brethren, But as for you, ye thought evil against me. But God meant it unto good to bring it to pass that it is this day, so much to save much people alive. Joseph looked at the good. He's been in prison. He could have got even with his brothers. And instead his response is, look at the good that's come about because of where I've been and where God put me. And you did it for evil, but God turned it into good. Deuteronomy, if you would, I want you to turn and look at this one. This is one I ran across a long time ago, and it's not in the lesson. It's outside the lesson. But Deuteronomy chapter 9. And with the war going on in Ukraine right now, this is, to me, interesting. 9:4. Deuteronomy 9:4. Speak not thou in thine heart after that the Lord thy God hath cast them out from before thee, saying, for my righteousness the Lord hath brought me to possess this land. But for the wickedness of these nations the Lord doth drive them from before thee. Not for thy righteousness or for thy uprightness of thine heart dost thou go to possess the land, but for the wickedness of these nations, the Lord thy God doth drive them out from before thee, and that he may perform the word which he is, Lord sware unto his fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Why is there war? Sometimes we think one evil nation is going to go against another evil nation. God's actually saying war is a way to bring about judgment. And it's not that we're so good and we're going to win. It's the other people actually were so wicked, God's going to use war to bring judgment. We lose sight of that many times. We can always trust that God will execute judgment against evil. There are people that start mentioning names. Idi Amin. Remember him? Idi Amin. A dictator. Down in, where? Haiti. And he killed a lot of people. Right now he's living it up somewhere in the world. And some of these other people have done that. In fact, I find sometimes with DNA, they finally figured out who killed this person, but he's already died. He never faced judgment. Oh, yes, he did. Of all of this, that God still is there, and they will face a judgment that they probably will be absolutely it's amazing that God's going to remember. If you kill somebody and you bury the body and nobody knows about it, nobody finds anything, 20 years later, somebody discovers the body. You know what can happen? They can still charge you with a murder. You can still go to court, still face punishment. And God is like that in a sense, that you can do your sin and nobody knows, you got away with it. But if it's not confessed, if it's not under the blood of Jesus Christ, somewhere in the future, you will stand in judgment of it. And we need to remember that for some of these atrocities that happen in the world with shootings and bombings and all kinds of stuff. We also know that God knows what we're going through. In Hebrews 4:15, for we have not a high priest which cannot be touched with the feelings of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted like as we are, yet without sin. We know that by God taking on the form of a man and coming into this world, you can't say, well, he doesn't know what I'm going through because he's God and he's way up there. He knows. He's been here. He's done that. So we need to keep that in mind. The hope of redemption is what gives Habakkuk the courage to keep going and trust God, even in such desperate surroundings. We will experience difficulty and pain, but as Christians, we will never experience difficulty without hope. And then there's the forgiveness of sins. We find in Colossians 1 and verse 14, in whom we have redemption through his blood, even the forgiveness of sins. Like I said, no Muslim can tell you that they're going to go to heaven. They don't know until their, quote, end of life, judgment of God. So they have no hope at all. But they think they're right. By the way, there is a Bible verse that people will kill other people thinking they're doing God's service. And I would put Muslims in that category real quick. There's also coming a time when the curse of sin on this earth is going to be done away with. Renewal of the earth. There's going to be a future, and he's looking more at probably the 1,000-year reign of the sea, reign of Christ, I'm sorry. For the earth shall be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. For the violence of Lebanon shall cover thee, and the spoil of beasts which made them afraid because of men's blood, and for the violence of the land of the city and of all that dwell therein. We find that over and over again, God is in control, and he is going to make things right. Eventually, it's not the renewal of the earth. Eventually, it's a replacement of the earth. In Revelation 21, verse 1, I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. And God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes. There shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away. Now, as Habakkuk is being told what God's going to do, he does come up with the statement in there, in thy judgment, remember mercy. And what changed his perspective as he's looking at what God's going to do is his view quit focusing on himself and God is in control, looking at it from God's point of view. And to avoid confusion in today's world, how should we respond? We should live by faith. We should pray for revival. We should rejoice in salvation. We should rely on his strength and continue confidence. Live by faith. I don't understand all that's going on, but I do know God has put me here for a purpose. We talked about that before. We ought to pray for revival. Over and over again, we find where some people who were really wicked people got saved, and it changed their lives. And that's one thing that makes Christianity far different than many other religions, that when God enters into a life, things do drastically change. Rejoice in salvation. I may not understand what's going on around me, but I do know eventually I'm going to be where there's no death and no pain and no sorrow and no suffering, and I have a lot to rejoice in. Rely on his strength. Lord, how do I get up in the morning when so uncertain, when so many fears? Well, I got to learn to rely that God's in control. I'm not going to undergo anything that I can't endure, that he's going to be with me through it all, and then continue with confidence. And that's it. I was told to get done when a bell rang, and here we are. Let's pray. Our dear Heavenly Father, we thank you again for your word, and we thank you that the book of Habakkuk's there as we look at today's world with all of the sin and sorrow that's ongoing. Lord, help us to realize you are in control, that man deserves to die because of his unbelief and his sin. Lord, help us to just have faith in you that you'll make it all right. And I thank you again for those who have come and for those who are a witness and a testimony for the Lord. And we ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen.